On today's episode of The Walk-Ons, a fun one, a little sports crossover. Often we bring on the football guests, our former teammates. Today, we dip into the wrestling world. Ryan Morningstar joins us, assistant coach for the Iowa Hawkeye wrestling team, and he provides an incredible 80-plus minutes of a look into another sport that us, the Walk-Ons, aren't as familiar with. Please enjoy the episode with Ryan. Let's have a day. Let's go.
This is the Wash Up Walk-Ons podcast, and today is one of the cool days where we get to talk to somebody who is an absolute badass, somebody who I know Kevin and I have been fans of for quite a while because we are huge Hawkeye wrestling fans, wrestling in general, really. Can't wait for Final X this weekend. But the Iowa wrestling program to us has held a bit of a lore because of the Brands brothers, and before that, Dan Gable, and all of the legends who have come through the Iowa wrestling room. And today we get the pleasure to talk to one of the coaches who molds the next generation of Hawkeye greats, Coach Ryan Morningstar. Thank you very much for joining us on the podcast. And I'm really looking forward to talking about something other than football, and especially something that I was simply not tough enough to take part in.
Yeah, well, I'm happy to be on. I follow you guys more during the season. I love listening to it. I can't get enough. Obviously I'm a huge Hawkeye football fan and really a huge fan of what you guys do. So thanks for having me. It's awesome.
Kind words. I don't know if we deserve that amount of praise. I don't know if your time is worth listening to us during the season, but, if we can entertain a little bit, then hey, you know, it all works out.
I throw it on a drive and I can kills an hour of my time whenever I'm going somewhere. So it's freaking awesome.
True.
Are you on a little road trip right now? Where are we going?
I am. So every year I go to South Dakota. My old college roommate and teammate, Joe Slayton, we used to do a camp out here. And so I started coming out in 2007. He couldn't come out that year because he had to do summer school. But he started coming out in 2008. And, you know, we've been coming ever since. So we love it out in the prairie and out in the grasslands and deadwood. And it's a good time just to let your hair down and have fun and get away for a while, you know, lose cell phone service and go. It's a good time. So that's, we're actually on our way there right now, pulled over for this, and he went in to eat. So I'm doing this.
So admittedly, Ryan, I am the least, well, other than Grant here, Grant is our kid intern, as I call him. He's 21 years old. So he is of legal age, but he's our kid intern. Other, you know, me and him here, we probably know the least amount about wrestling. Kevin,
I don't think you should downplay G-Bone. You don't know what G-Bone's wrestling knowledge depth is.
I know close to nothing.
He just said
when lucky.
I'm a fan, but I have no idea what's going on.
He just said he doesn't know anything about it before we started the podcast. anyway, I'm excited to kind of sit back here, but I would love to know, just to start, you wrestled for the Hawks. Pretty good at it. Take us back all the way. I think we're really interested in the coaching side and of course how you get to work with the athletes right now, but will you bring us up to speed on, you started wrestling as a kid, you went through high school, your recruiting process all the way to like you and the end of your career at Iowa, and how all that sort of went?
So, obviously I grew up 25 minutes from Iowa City. I grew up in Lisbon, big wrestling community. And, there was a kids club out of Carver Hawkeye Arena. So I was always around, I was in that group. I was always around the Brands brothers and Zaleski, and Gable was always around, even though he was retired. He had an administrative job, but, so I grew up in the room basically, grew up going to Hawkeye Wrestling Club practices when I got a little older, and, you know, had some success in high school, got recruited, and it was kind of a funny time because Tom Brands took the job at Virginia Tech. And so right when I was going through the recruiting process, you know, Tom Brands, who you know, was my idol growing up. You know, watched him win an Olympic gold medal in 96, vividly remember. And so him going to Virginia Tech, it, you know, it changed some things, even though I always knew I was going to be a Hawkeye. And so he went to Virginia Tech, recruited me hard to go to Virginia Tech, had all Hawkeyes on his staff. And so took a visit to Blacksburg. You know, it was hard consideration not to go there. I think, you know, even through the recruiting process, my parents, they saw what Tom Brands had to offer and what I'd be getting and knew I was going to be well taken care of, even though I was that far away. They kind of wanted me to go there, I felt. And they let me make my decision ultimately. And I picked the Hawkeyes just because I always wanted to wrestle for Iowa. I was a huge fan growing up. I knew everybody. There was so much familiarity. And so that's what I ended up doing. And so he was at Virginia Tech. He was there for a year. At the end of my freshman year, he got hired back at Iowa. So it was, I redshirted that year. I actually got hurt that year as well. So I was on the road to recovery when Tom was back in Iowa City in April. So it was awesome to have him back and a bunch of my kids I grew up with in this area, you know, Slayton and Borsell and Dan McClare. They went out to Virginia Tech and they came back. You know, Brent Metcalf was also in that class. He moved to Iowa City. And so it worked out great to, you know, I spent a year under Zaleski. He was great. He was a good coach, good mentor. But ultimately Tom coming back was the best thing for me. It was best of both worlds. So worked out pretty well.
I want to go back to like that first would have been your freshman year. Yep. The Hawks missed the podium that year and Coach Zaleski gets fired, correct?
Yeah. So actually my freshman year, we were fourth at the Nationals. We had a strong recruiting class that year too. You know, we had guys like Dan Erickson and Phil Keddie and Dan Dennis. And it was a good class of guys. Chad Beatty was in there too. So it was a great class. And then we ended up, so I was redshirting. The only one that wasn't redshirting was Dan Erickson. He was a national qualifier and we ended up fourth. So at the time, you know, it didn't seem like that was going to happen. And then it did. And it was, I think Bob Bowlsby was just that was the year he retired as well. So he knew that he needed to get Tom Brands back or it was going to be, however long before a new AD was going to come in and bring him back. So he took it upon himself and made that change. And it was a great change ultimately, because, you know, we won the Nationals 3 years in a row, you know, 2 years later, a year later. So.
Yeah. I just thought it was interesting. Like, you know, having a fourth place finish, just being unacceptable for the Iowa Hawkeyes that we got.
Yeah.
Yeah. Brands is a guy that you got to go get, right?
Yeah, and he was making waves at Virginia Tech as well. I mean, he signed the number one recruiting class basically with nothing. I mean, Virginia Tech wrestling, I mean, it was unheard of. You know, there was people that didn't even know Virginia Tech had a program, and then he goes out and signs the number one class. And I think
Did those guys decommit from Virginia Tech and come to Iowa?
So they actually spent a year at Virginia Tech. And, okay. So then at the time, it was a funny situation because they were coming back no matter what. They followed Tom to Virginia Tech. When I say they, it was Metcalf, Slayton, Borsell, and McClare. They followed Tom to Virginia Tech for Tom Brands. And, so when Tom came back here, Virginia Tech and actually Coach Dresser, Iowa State, he took over the program. They wouldn't release those guys. So they ultimately lost a year of eligibility. So back in the 2006-2007 season, we were seventh, but we were without those guys because they didn't get released.
Yeah. No transfer portal. Yeah.
No transfer portal. Yeah. It would have been a lot easier then. And it's just kind of funny how that all worked out and how, you know, it is now compared to then.
It's tough being such a great coach that you recruit the best recruiting class for a team that you're no longer the coach of. That's brutal.
For sure. For sure.
Speak to that a little bit, though, because, you know, we've gotten a couple of chances to hear Coach Brands come speak to the football team. And I can only describe the man as
electric.
Like, he speaks to you, you listen, and you feel it in every part of your bones. Like, what's it like to work with that guy day in and day out? And like, do you get to see, like, when he's in a recruit's family's like home and like just see their eyes light up the way that I felt like mine did when I was listening to him talk?
It's funny because, you know, I've been around Tom since 2004 when he was recruiting me. And, you know, when he goes into a recruit's home or when we go in, it's just like, I get fired up just listening to him. You know, I want to flip the table over and rip out some pushups or something, you know. It's I still get that same feeling. He's so motivational, and it's real. It's not like someone coming in and giving you a recruiting spiel. I mean, people write down notes that they have to hit when they go in and into a recruit's home. Like, it's straight from the heart. It's straight down the pipe. It's the truth. And I mean, it's so motivating. I mean, every day being around that guy and Terry is just a blessing. You know, I mean, having guys that motivated and you know, such great role models and everything they do is pretty special. And I mean, how fortunate am I to get to work with people like that? You know, it's unbelievable.
What is the Tom Terry dynamic in the office around practice times?
It's awesome. You can tell they're definitely twin brothers because there's no gray lines anywhere. I mean, it's straight down the pipe. They tell you exactly how it is. I mean, it's entertaining at moments too, you know. Or, you know, Tom will walk by Terry's office with a cup of water and just say, "Fire in the hole," and throw it in his office. You know, they're awesome. I mean, and you know, back, you know, 30 years ago would have come to blows, but now they kind of laugh it off. Like, hey, you're lucky we're not 25. Cause this would not
I would love to hear them get into an argument and just go back and forth. That would be so entertaining.
Do you ever get put in a position where you got to pick a side on an argument?
I was going to ask that. Where do you stand on the whole, like, you have to play liaison sometimes?
I don't go down that path. I sit back and let it go. And, you know, it's funny though, because there's arguments and there's discussions and sometimes even heated discussions, but at the end of the day, we're all on the same page and things get talked out and it works so smooth. There's no times that I can remember where there's a heated argument or heated discussion where what to do with the guy. And it carries over into anything else. I mean, we hash it out, we figure it out, we move forward. And that's what's so misunderstood with Tom and Terry is just the fact that it's not personal. Nothing's personal with them. It's about getting the job done. It's about doing it the right way. And nothing's personal. And there's a line that there's a high standard that needs to be met. And if they don't think it's being met in a certain area, like it's very well communicated that we need to get in line with that standard. And, you know, you look at our fans, you look at that, at our, the people that are Iowa wrestling fans, they expect a high standard. They expect business to be ran like that. And if it's not run like that, then, you know, that's when things kind of go south. And that's one thing that I really, you know, I worked at University of Wisconsin as a head assistant up there for a year before I came back here in 2012. And it wasn't like that. And nothing against the dynamic of that coaching staff. It was a young coaching staff with and then Barry Davis was the head coach, but it was just different. Not saying that I was better in that sense. It's just different. And the way that we operate seems to work for us. And I mean, I wouldn't trade it for anything.
Would you attribute that difference to like the standard of expectations set? Like at Iowa, like the goal has got to be national championship every year, right? That just can't be true for all teams out there, right? It's just not realistic.
No, and not slanting any other programs. you know, but you go to the national tournament or even, you know, you hear recruits talk about, you know, what other coaches are saying about we're after a trophy this mm-hmm. year. Or, you know, you see people at the national tournament, how like ecstatic they are to get a fourth place trophy or third place trophy or second place trophy. And that's great for them. You know, there's building blocks everywhere, but you know, when you don't win, it hurts. It's just different. And I can't explain it. And it's losing funny, sucks. Like when recruits come to town, they see that too, you know, it's so funny watching these kids, like, they'll be walking around campus or wherever in Iowa City on their recruiting visit. And people already know who they are. And they're like, hey, did you set that up? I'm like, no, like it's just how it is in Iowa City. Like I was a couple years ago, I was walking kids through the dorms and, one of the maintenance guys there just starts, we ran into him in the elevator and he just started talking Iowa wrestling. And this guy, and I'm kicking myself cause I can't remember his name, but he starts just going off. And then he's like, hey, let's do the real tour. And then he takes us through everything. And then next thing you know, he's giving out his number to these parents if they have any questions when it comes to the dorms or any questions with anything on campus. This guy was like a wealth of knowledge. And I was like, dang, you know, he's just a fan. So Iowa City is a special place. The state of Iowa is a special place when it comes to you know, wrestling. It's like
no sports in general, to be honest. I mean, if you see what Hawk fans have done with women's basketball and men's basketball, oh, it's just it's a Hawkeye crazy state. It's pretty sweet. Oh,
absolutely. You know, and it's to our benefit. It's to Iowa's benefit that there's no, you know, pro sports in Iowa because the huge Hawkeyes are the pro sport, you know, yeah. And it helps that, you know, these kids, they rub shoulders with these other athletes that they've seen before. And it's really, I mean, you guys are part of it. You guys knew several wrestlers while you're going through school and it's a special place. It really is.
Do you attribute the Hawkeye fandom wrestling in Carver, the electricity that you get during a dual meet there to a lot of the recruiting wins? Do you think that plays a big factor in guys wanting to come here?
Yeah, it plays a huge factor. And you know, there's no other fan base like our fan base. I think we averaged just under 15,000 per dual meet this year. And the next closest one was Penn State. And I think they had maybe 10. And, you know, and then it's even better when, I mean, a lot of your recruiting is done in the fall. You know, we go to football games and we usually do a big football game. But if they're able to go to a dual meet, I mean, their eyes are just wide open because they've never experienced anything like it before. There's nothing like it.
When y'all shoot the flames, the lights go down, you shoot the flames, the hype video is on. I mean, I have chills running through my skin thinking about just being able to be out there. That would be so insane.
Do you have any favorite dual meets with like the overall environment that come to mind in the last 15 years?
Oh, man. There's a lot. There's so many. You know, any dual meet that has a lot of build up to it, whether it's Iowa State when they come to town, that's always going to be an exciting duel. And then, you know, Penn State has always, I mean, that's been the dual meet for the last whatever 5-6 years, just because of the status of the two programs. And mm-hmm. So those dual meets are always fun. They're always unexpected. There's things that happen that aren't supposed to happen. And that's what really, really gets the crowd going in Carver, and that roof just blowing off.
I don't know if I've ever been to a louder venue in my entire life. You know, we've played in 100,000 per people football stadiums, but I don't know if I've ever been to a louder venue in my entire life than the 2019 Penn State duel during the Kemmerer Hall match.
Oh my gosh.
that was one of the most
I'm getting goosebumps just thinking about it. Yeah.
One of the most insane environments I've ever been.
Yeah, that was pretty wild, and it didn't look good for us at the time because
we needed that.
You know, yeah, we needed it. Marinelli lost in a tight match, and he came back and almost won. And then Kemmerer coming out and beating Mark Hall, who was ranked number one at the time, and Kemmerer was always a 57 pounder, you know, so he was up two weights from where he was in the past, and that was, I mean, memories like that. I mean, it's hard to top for me when you see stuff like that come together and the accumulation of all of it, and it's pretty cool.
It's the mecca of college wrestling, and I'm so blessed that I live 10 minutes away from it. So
I actually didn't know that there was such a big discrepancy between us and every other programs from a fan standpoint. Like, I would have expected Penn State to get an arena full of people just because they're Penn State. But it shows just how wild Iowa fans are for Iowa wrestling.
There's really nothing like it. You know, Penn State's done a good job of obviously the last whatever 12 years that Sanderson's been there. But this environment that's been created here by Dan Gable, and then you know, ever since there's really nothing like it. And until you experience like other venues, like there's other good venues, there's other big dual meets you know, around the country, but you know, you look at the Big Ten Network when like their viewership of an Iowa duel versus anywhere else, even though you're packing the stands, there's more eyes on that Iowa duel than anywhere else. And then you throw in a program like Penn State where that Iowa wrestles in it. I mean, it shatters.
I mean, I'm going to be honest. So we went on when we were on our official visit, we went to a dual meet, and it would have been the 2013 Iowa Penn State meet, which we ended up winning. And again, roof is like about to bust off the stadium.
You were at that one, huh? McDonough got a big win, and that was probably the loudest I've ever heard it, just because it was the first match, and then Ramos followed up with a pin. That was loud too. But when McDonough won, and we needed that match, you know, to go our way, we couldn't have an upset there to win the duel on paper. But my ears were ringing. I'll never forget it. I walked back to the corner, and my ears were literally vibrating. That was the loudest I've ever heard it.
Hey, it's Peter Harmon, the food guru, here to talk about Gray's Gourmet To Go. At Gray's Gourmet To Go, we are madly and passionately in love with three things: chicken lips, pizza, and great food to go. Chicken lips are the most beloved food in Iowa City. And if you don't know what a chicken lip is, you're really missing out. Our second passion is pizza. We're hell-bent on making great pizza. Yeah, you can get cheap pizza anywhere, but if you're a real pizza aficionado, you gotta try our meatball pizza. It's made with a natural starter, and like sourdough bread, it's soft and crispy and light as air. And the third thing that we're wildly and passionately in love with is great food to go. We believe you want to feed your family something great at home, but you're too busy with life to stop and cook. That's why we built Gray's Gourmet To Go. So the next time you need to feed the gang and you don't feel like cooking, just come to graysgourmettogo.com.
And I, as 18-year-old kid, I was like, this is awesome. This is how crazy these fans get for wrestling. I want to come here. I went into my official visit not planning to come to the University of Iowa. I was going to go to Air Force Academy. I was just kind of taking the visit, checking it out. I'm not going to lie. That environment for the wrestling meet got me thinking. It's like, okay, maybe we should take a closer look here. But ever since that meet, I've been a huge wrestling fan, just because it's just an awesome environment. I've fallen in love just watching two guys compete. My question is, how do we grow the sport across the country to like where that's basically the standard at every college, man? Because I think it's an awesome sport that if you are a sports fan, there should be more eyeballs on these guys.
Facts.
Yeah, and I agree. And the Big Ten Network has really helped out the Big Ten a lot. You know, I don't know the numbers for this year, but like the two previous years, it was football, men's basketball, wrestling for the highest viewership. Mm-hmm. And I think that wrestling is growing, and networks like the Big Ten Network is obviously going to help. And so hopefully some other conferences kind of get on board with that at some point. But these kids, they get such a big platform being primetime, you know, Friday night and Sunday afternoon, being able to wrestle on national television is huge for the sport. Now we can't stop there. We have to keep growing it. We got to keep making things better. I think we're headed in the right direction, but you're absolutely right. I think the Big Ten Network to me is the glowing thing that has really helped helped the Big Ten in general as far as wrestling programs, of just getting that national spotlight, getting that attention. And it makes the Big Ten as a whole stronger, just because kids now, they want to wrestle in front of crowds. They want to wrestle on national television. They want to wrestle. And, you know, if they travel across the country to go to school, their parents have an opportunity to watch them live, opposed to, you know, maybe on the internet, maybe not at all. So, you know, the Big Ten in wrestling is the premier conference. So, mm-hmm. And I think the Big Ten Network is, you know, that has, you know, helped that out tremendously.
Does UCLA or USC have wrestling teams, or?
They don't. I don't know. You know,
LA is a bunch of pussies, man. Wrestling don't belong out there.
Well, we're recruiting a couple guys from California, though. So there's a couple tough guys out there.
Northern California, I've heard, has some decent wrestling. I know DC from the UFC coaches a high school team out there.
Yeah, Gilroy. They have a very strong program and a lot of good recruits coming out of there. So
shout out Chase Saldate, huh?
Chase Saldate.
Yeah. Dude, I've been watching that kid since he was like 15, because he was grappling with the Daggies out there at AKA. I was so jealous of that kid.
The kid can scrap too. He's tough. He's real tough. Yeah. So yeah, California, I mean, DC, he's awesome. I mean, he's an Okie State guy, but he's always cool to me. And, you know, if I have a recruiting question, he always gets back to me on stuff. And it's funny because he goes out there and he's DC, you know, he's Daniel.
Right. Clark.
He's the face of MMA, you know, I mean, not the face, but he's one of the main faces of MMA. Yeah. And then he'll call a fight on Friday or on Saturday. And on Sunday, he'll be at a kids tournament, you know, with little kids. It's just like, holy smokes, this is freaking awesome. You know, I mean, kudos to him. He doesn't have to do that. He just loves the sport and knows what. Obviously, he likes to coach and likes to be, molding young men into great wrestlers and then hopefully great contributors to society someday.
Yeah, that's kind of like the best coaching mold, is to care about your athletes a lot more from a human standpoint than a performance standpoint. It usually shows a pretty good performance correlation when you show your athletes care about them.
For sure. For sure. I mean, you see that in our football program. You see that across the board with all of our sports teams, really. We've got great coaches at the University of Iowa. We're spoiled. And, you know, we're pretty fortunate to have the people that we have in place, you know. Start at the top with Ferentz. I mean, what better guy can you get than him? I mean, he is awesome. You know?
The dean of college football.
You know, and it's fun. It's awesome because when I first got back to Iowa in 2012, after being at Wisconsin, you know, you get on a plane to go do an iClub and you know, it's your eyes are wide open. Kirk Ferentz is sitting right across from you. And it's like, oh my God. And then all of a sudden he's engaging and he cares what you have to say. And
he's thinking the same thing about you. He's like, this is Ryan Morningstar. He wrestled for the Hawks, coaches for the Hawks. Like, damn, this guy's legit. He's thinking the same thing. I promise.
It's funny because like, when I was at Wisconsin, you know, Barry Alvarez is like a god up there, you know? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there's a bronze statue right when I walked into my office, like, you know, I mean, really cool, you know, and so I just got to Wisconsin. It was like the first week of school. And Barry Davis, the head coach, couldn't go to this head coach's meeting. And so he's like, hey, why don't you go sit in for me at this head coach's meeting? And so I'm in this head coach's meeting, and it's like a big round table. I mean, there's probably 30 people in there. And I'm like sitting at the end by myself. And all of a sudden, coming out the back through the back door is Barry Alvarez. And he sits down literally right next to me. And I'm like, oh my God, it's Barry Alvarez, you know? And so this lady that was running the talk, she was like, she goes, oh, you might be experiencing your freshmen coming into school. They're experiencing new things. They're, you know, we as coaches need to understand that they might be homesick and they might be this. She went through a long spiel about everything. So why don't you break off into groups with the person next to you and, talk about the feelings that you had coming, you know, to your college program to compete, you're being away from home. Talk about what some of the things that you went through and some of the things that you had to overcome. And she starts going on. I'm like, oh my gosh, I get to sit down with freaking Barry Alvarez.
One-on-one with Barry Alvarez.
And I'm like, and hear about his college experience coming in as a freshman. And then, well, and I'm like sitting there, I'm fired up. So I turn over to Barry Alvarez and he looks at me and he smacks me in the chest. He goes, go work with those people over there. Like, oh. That was like the only interaction I ever had with him. But
he's like, I don't need to do this shit.
Yeah, here's a wrestling coach that I've never met before. Yeah, you're a young kid. Go work with those guys over there. But so I had that feeling, you know, when I, you know, first time I sat down with Ferris, I was like, oh my gosh, like starstruck a little bit. And he was just, I mean, he's the best. I mean, what more can you say? He's the best.
I guarantee you he remembers stuff that you talked about too.
Oh yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Like he remembers small details about stuff you talk about. It's truly incredible because the guy is talking to 18 million different people every day.
And think all the things that he's seen and every, I mean, it's incredible. It's incredible.
Going back to when you came back to Iowa to coach, did you have any crossover with any guys that you were player like wrestling with at the time? Like any of the lower classes, were they still there when you came back?
Yeah. So I graduated in 2010. I wrestled. So I spent 1 year in the Hawkeye Wrestling Club, competed internationally. And then in 2011, 2012 season, I went to Wisconsin, and then 2012, I got hired back. So there was a lot of guys on the team that I was kind of a mentor to. I mean, shoot, 3/4 of them were guys I was teammates with.
What was that? What was that dynamic like for you?
I was teammates with Mark Perry, and I talked to him a lot. Like when I was at Wisconsin, he was coaching as well. I mean, he was a young coach, and so I had some conversations with him, and he explained it the best when I first got the job at Wisconsin. He was like, a lot of these kids are going to be, you know, basically around your age, and your job necessarily isn't to be like a hardline guy when you're young. Your job is to be more like an older brother. And so that kind of resonated with me as far as holding kids accountable, but also, you know, not changing who you are either. And sure. not all of a sudden you're a switch flips and you're this fire breathing coach that, you know, you were teammates with and you bled with, basically, you know, and all of a sudden you're a coach, and that flip, you can't just flip a switch and all of a sudden you're a different guy. You still have to be the same guy that you are. And now you're just an older brother, which I was to them. I think that's one of the reasons why Tom hired me back was, just like he saw in the room that I took a lot of guys kind of under my wing, at a young, you know, when I was older in the program and really talked to guys, engaged with guys, mentored guys. And I think that was one of the qualities why that he saw that brought me back to Iowa City.
So I got one for you. You talked about guys that you bled with. And we've heard stories that Iowa wrestling training is pretty legendary. It's ridiculously hard. Kluver kind of had this question as well. Talk to us about like a really grueling wrestling training session for Iowa wrestling.
Well, we kind of have this stigma that all we do is train like really, really hard and we run through brick walls and no time for rest. And there is a time to train hard. There is a time that, that you got to work, and there's a time that you need to back off too. And there's, it's all part of a system. But when it's time to train and it's time to go, it's hard to put my finger on any workout. So say a workout during our training phase, we might drill in the morning, hard, tough practice in the afternoon with a lot of conditioning.
What's that conditioning look like? Because I'm kind of new to grappling as well. Started with jiu-jitsu, but have really started to realize how important wrestling is when it comes to grappling. And wrestling is one of the most unfathomably hard things that I've ever done because your cardio has to be otherworldly. So like, what is your guys' cardio routines?
A normal practice is you run through drills where, one guy's executing holds, then you switch to the other guy once you get hot. And then you might do like a lot of stance and motion and knockouts. Then like sumo drills, we have circles in our ring, in our room, where, we do like the first to 10 pushouts and then, grab a drink and then you're back to your hard wrestling again. I mean, it just kind of depends on the day, but there's so many different drills that we do to kind of ramp it up. We do a red flag workout, we call it, where it's nonstop moving the whole time, where, you allow drinks, but there's cups of water ready to go. And if you need a drink, you run by, grab a drink on the run and throw your cup in the trash. And then you're right back into something. And the hardest workouts are the structured type workouts, where it's nonstop for whatever, 2 hours. And guys are literally trying to rip your head off. You're trying to do the same to him. And, it's funny because, people talk about tough Iowa workouts, but there's guys that can, you could legitimately dog it if you wanted to, but if you actually do the work, you're going to get a lot out of it. Mm-hmm. Unless you're doing like time stairs and you have to meet a certain time or like time sprint laps above Carver where, that one doesn't count if you're not under a minute five and that kind of stuff, there's no hiding from it, but there's a lot of times, guys that don't want to put the output in, they could get through tough workouts, but the guys that push hard and get the most out of themselves, those are the guys that are going to be really, getting the most out of themselves really. And that's hard work. That's hard. We've done workouts too, where, it'll be like a summer workout where just say, all right, 45 minute go, no breaks, first one to quit, your day's over, so you'll have guys out there for, whatever, 45 minutes, an hour long, just wrestling hard.
One-on-one, just wrestling the same guy.
None of them want to quit. Or, you might do I've had it where, all right, slap hands, first one to 100 points. And guys will be scrapping for an hour and 20 minutes and they don't want to give up anything, and those kind of workouts are probably the hardest, especially if you have, and your matchups, like you get to know your athletes and know where they're at, your matchups, where if you have two guys that they're not going to give you anything, then, you're going to be there a while and you might have to step in at the hour mark or hour and 20 mark and say, all right, guys, let's get your executions in and get your rope climbs in and buddy push-ups and, and you're out. You know, there's workouts like that. Those are probably, for me, those were the toughest, because if I got lined up with whoever that, you know, they weren't going to quit, I wasn't going to quit. You know, it's, I mean, it gets pretty dicey, pretty dicey. That's when, you know, the fists can come out because guys are frustrated. That's when, you know, chokeholds get thrown in.
And yeah, now we're talking.
That's when that kind of stuff can happen. But yeah, those are the toughest workouts.
I can't even imagine. I messed around with jiu-jitsu for a little bit too, and a 6-minute session is just brutally exhausting. And I see, like, in a match, by the third period, guys are like toast, right? How do you go for 100 points, you know, like an hour?
That's masochistic.
Yeah. Like, what does that look like by the end? Like, are they not just leaning on each other by the end of the thing, or what?
Well, yeah. I mean, obviously, you know, paces might slow down a little bit, but if one guy picks it up and goes hard for scores, the other guy's going to pick it up too. So, I mean, guys can stand in front of each other. And if you see guys, so say it's a workout like that, it's like first one to quit and guys are standing in front of each other. I mean, they're not getting what they need to out of it anyway, you know? So, all right, you guys are done, you know? Mm-hmm. And then, or that you might threaten that, and then they pick it up, and next thing you know, the first flying again, you know? But yeah, I mean, by the end of some of those workouts, I mean, guys are dead. And there's, I mean, the human body, I mean, you guys know the human body is pretty, pretty incredible. And your mind always quits before your body's going to quit. And like Terry Brands always says, your body's not going to betray you. You stay in there and fight, your body's not going to betray you. And you're going to, you know, at the end of the day, I mean, when it's two guys in, you know, it's a battle of wills. I mean, you find a way to make things happen, and it can be really entertaining if you're watching it too.
Isn't like one of Gable's quotes in like his book was like, he was pissed off that he was never able to work himself to like, just like, I think until he
to going to sleep. Like that.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm paraphrasing, but the Gable quote is, you know, his goal when he was training was not to be able to walk out of the room, that he had to crawl out. That's mm-hmm. like kind of the paraphrase of what Gable talks about. Yeah. I mean, and I believe it too. I mean, as a older man, and I was a young kid in there and watching him work out, I'm like, I mean, Tom and Terry, they're the same way. I mean, they're cut from the same cloth when it comes to that aspect. But yeah, that's the philosophy. That's the philosophy of the program.
What does Gable mean to the program still in 2023, and what's his involvement level these days?
He's not as involved anymore. Obviously, he's a figurehead of our Hawkeye Wrestling Club. He is, you know, when he talks, people listen. You know, when he comes in and he talks, people listen. And you know, Gable is, there's no one else like him as far as, you know, what he did for the University of Iowa and what he did as an athlete. I mean, he did some pretty spectacular things going unscored on the Olympic Games. And he's not as involved anymore. He's got grandkids. He goes to Florida in the winter, still makes it to, I don't know, probably dang near every duel, since front row. But yeah, he's a huge part of this program, just for everything that he's done. And he's always going to be a huge part of this program. And there's nothing that's going to change that.
So I got a question for you about maybe mentality or something of the sorts, because the one-on-one aspect that you continue to mention is one of the most nerve-wracking and frightening things about the whole sport, because partaking in some grappling things, tournaments and stuff myself these days, the nerves you get just to be one-on-one with somebody else, whether you trust your skills and stuff against theirs or not, it is ridiculously nerve-wracking. How do you coach your athletes to be able to handle that? And Carver in front of Dan Gable with the fire breathing as they enter, like, how do they how do you bulletproof their minds to not think about the outside and just go wrestle?
Everybody's a little bit different, but, you know, that's part of the recruiting process too, because, you know, going after those guys that are big light kind of guys are the guys we want. Those are the guys we target. It's always going to be nerve wracking to be one-on-one in front of, I mean, one-on-one in general, and then throw in the fans, throw in the smoke and throw in the flames. If that doesn't get you going, if that doesn't make you a little bit nervous and get the butterflies going, then you're probably don't need to be there.
True.
Tom talks about it to everyone on the team. You get in front of that crowd, are you going to embrace it? Are you going to have them in the palm of your hand, or are you going to shit your pants? and he says it all. I mean, it talks about it all the time. And, you know, there's a lot of psychology that goes into it. And dealing with those emotions, dealing with the high pressure situations. And I think it starts targeting the right guys and getting the guys that thrive in that environment, and then just building them and getting them to believe that they belong and that believe that they're the man. Obviously wrestling is, there's nothing else like it as far as that one-on-one combat is, it's humbling because, there's no pointing fingers like, hey, coach, you didn't do that. I mean, it's on you, you know.
There's nowhere to hide.
There's nowhere to hide. Go out and perform. Do what you've done your whole life. And have fun doing it. I mean, enjoy it, because you're not going to have opportunities like this in 10 years from now. You're going to be doing whatever in life, and hopefully you're successful at it. But being in that situation is an opportunity. It's not a time for fear. It's a time for excitement, and it's a time to go out and do what you were born to do and enjoy it while it lasts, because it doesn't last forever.
So do you feel the nerves more as a coach when it's not in your hands? You're pulling for them so hard, but you know, you can't do anything while they're out there.
It's a lot harder because, it's a lot harder because there's literally nothing you can do. You can prepare them the best that you can, but then it's up to them.
Yep.
As an athlete, you can control it, and you can really, you can control your outcome in all reality. It's really hard as a coach, but, I'm not saying being the competitor is, I mean, that's it's hard for him, you know, that's his time to be on the mat. And, you know, as a competitor, I would get nervous, but to answer your question, I would get nervous, and get those butterflies. And as a coach, I feel the same that I did then. It's just a different situation where you can't control it. It's a harder outlet for sure. It's not easier as a coach, me personally as a coach, than it was as an athlete. Another side of it is, you know, you got 10 guys to worry about. You know, when I was competing, I just had to worry about me. Mm-hmm. You know, you had one job to go out there, you prepare for one guy, and it's up to me to go do what I do best. And now as a coach, you know, you're worried about the 10 guys competing. You're worried about their preparation. You're worried about, is there anything undone that needs to be done? How are they feeling? You're worried about all 10 guys, and it's hard. I mean, it's hard. And, you know, as a competitor, it's a 7-minute match. You know, now as a coach, you know, you got a 7-minute match, then it's like, holy smokes, here we go again.
Yeah.
You know, your nerves are right back into it, you know? You know, so it's, you know, I dealt, you know, there's some instances this year where it was like, you know, you lose a really heart wrenching match, and then a match later, you got to have your excitement up mm-hmm. for the next guy. You got to be ready to go for the next guy and have your energy where it needs to be for him and be supportive of him, make sure he's got everything he needs, even when your mind is all over the place.
That would be an extremely hard thing to do, is just immediately put that to the side and be the just the same exact coach you are at every single match. Because I know when I was an athlete and even as a fan, like when bad shit happens to people or teams you care about, it hits you no matter what. So having to like recenter, that's tough to do.
It's not easy. And that's, but as a coach, that's your job. Just because you got your guts ripped out somewhere else doesn't mean that doesn't mean you can suck your thumb and next thing you're going to have your guts ripped out again if you're not back on par. You know, you got to get your shit together, get ready to go.
Yeah.
I'm always fascinated by like the different culture dynamics across different sports. And wrestling being an individual sport, but a team sport at the same time. Do you think there's any specific like challenges there is with creating a team culture with that, as far as, you know, trying to overcome the me mentality? Like even in team sports, it happens all the time, you know, guys who are looking out for themselves more so than the team. Do you think there's anything specific towards that, towards like the individual team sports that, you know, like it's, yeah, we're the Iowa Hawkeyes, but I just got to worry about me going to win my match. Is there?
Yeah. And go ahead,
man. Yeah.
Okay. So, good question. You know, the culture that we try to teach to our guys is, you know, worry about yourself first, because if you do your job, the team will take care of itself. That's a principle of this program. And if you do your job, just worry about your job and the team will take care of itself. That being said, it's also important to have, you know, that team camaraderie, knowing that your brothers are behind your back, even though that you're the one on the mat, they got your back. So it's good to have that support. Now I will say, you know, Jacob Warner, he's a 197 pounder, and you know, early in his career, he would have some performances where it was like, what the hell's going on? You know, well, you'd look back at the bench at the 157, 165 pound match, and he's jumping over the coach's chairs into the match. You know, he's like fired up, like he's wanting his boys to do good, you know, do well, you know. And so, you know, we had to get to a point where, all right, you can watch these first couple matches, you need to relax, but you need to get ready for you. And he was getting so emotionally hyped in some of these matches, he was getting tired and he was feeling it. And it, I mean, when you have like emotional spikes, especially in like big dual meets, you might be in the best shape of your life, but you're still going to get tired.
That adrenaline dump is a wild thing.
Even as a fan, like you walk out of some of those things, it's like you're feeling tired by the end of it.
So, yeah. I mean, so a guy like Warner, we'd be like, hey, listen, you know, you can watch a couple of these matches, but if we look back and you're jumping around and you're freaking out and flexing and screaming, like, you know, we can't have this. And as a youngster, he was so like into all the matches. So there's that great side teammate of it too, where he's a great teammate. He's a great teammate. He's a great kid too. He's awesome. But you'd rather have to be a balance.
Like Coach Parker, our defensive coordinator, would say, is like, I'd much rather have to put the leash on you and hold you back than try to light a fire under your ass. Right.
100%. 100%. So good question though. That's something that we deal with a lot, and you see it in young guys. You got to get on top of it quick, because you know, our guys are tight. We have Christmas together, we have Thanksgiving together, we have team meals, and I mean, they're a tight group of guys, and we try to build that culture where, you know, these guys are our brothers, and they might even be competing against each other for a spot in the lineup, but we have each other's backs. And, you know, having that brotherhood, that camaraderie is huge. And having that support is huge, but you also, you got to take care of yourself first too, because that ultimately will lead to, you know, the best thing for the team.
For sure. You know, now with Spencer Lee, graduating, moving on, who are the new leaders taking over in the locker room, going to move us forward?
I mean, it's easy to point to guys like Drake Ayala, you know, Patrick Kenny, Real Woods. I mean, he's back for another year. It's easy to to point to, you know, guys like Cassiope and some of these older guys that have some pretty good accolades, you know, are good teammates and hold each other accountable. You know, Spencer's, I mean, a great leader. He's still going to be around. You know, I mean, you can even go back to guys like as far back as like Brandon Sorensen and Marinelli and DeSanto and Caleb Young. All those guys are great teammates. Like, they're unbelievably good teammates and supportive and have shown the way for some of these young guys. And so this, our lineup next year is going to be a lot different. You know, we've had Spencer for a long time and has been the face of the program. So it's going to be interesting. We'll have a summer training phase coming up. It'll be interesting how, you know, some of these pieces kind of fit together. We'll learn a lot more then, but we have great leadership. We have, you know, great teammates and guys that are very capable and you know, and I'm talking about a lot of older guys too, but like even young guys can be great leaders. I mean, Kennedy's going to be a sophomore next year. I mean, he's got his COVID year and everything, but I mean, he's a leader by example. You see what he's done in the, you know, in the room, his work ethic, his lifestyle, same thing with Drake, Ayala. I mean, he's a young guy, and those are guys that, you know, we're going to look to for leadership. And I mean, all the way up and down, there's so many guys I can point to, but yeah, those are kind of the guys that do a really good job and do it by example. And if you're out of line, you're going to hear it from them. They're not going to sugarcoat anything. You know, a lot of our guys there's no dancing around anything. It's just like, hey, if you're out of line, you're going to get called to the carpet. And, you know, that's the kind of leadership you want too.
Yeah, I got a question for you that I ask a lot of guys about their respective experiences. I want to hear your top four Mount Rushmore of Hawks you either competed with or have coached.
Top four? Oh, man. I mean, so obviously Tom and Terry are
there. They're excluded, though, because you didn't. You didn't compete with
guys
them
that, or guys coach that I them. Coached.
Yeah, yeah. Oh. Or compete. So your same age or guys that you coached.
So basically what, 2007 on?
Yeah.
Oh, man. I mean, am I going off of accolades or am I going off of just.
It's your Mount Rushmore. It doesn't matter.
Oh, it's my Mount Rushmore. Oh, yeah. Shoot. Well.
Could just be awesome human beings. Could be the funniest dude in the locker room. I don't know. Best wrestler. Well,
first one that comes to mind is probably Sorensen, Brandon Sorensen. He's a four-time All-American. He was a national finalist, was never a national champ. But as far as somebody that, I mean, just a good dude, good locker room guy, will do anything that you ask. And then some, you know, and he, you know, I always, so he was part of the first recruiting class when I got to Iowa. So he was like one of our main guys that we went and got. And he was the first home visit I ever did with Tom. He had leukemia. He was diagnosed with leukemia. Yeah. And some of the shit that I saw him go through, I'm just like, this guy is just a special, special human being. I mean, there's nothing more I could say about that guy. He's unbelievable. So he's definitely on there for me. Man, I'm not going off accolades. I'm just going off.
Perfect.
I have a lot. I love Max Murin. I freaking love Max Murin. He talk about a guy that, just gave you everything he had in his tank. And maybe, I mean, he was an All-American this year. He was an All-American, for the COVID year that we got, the year taken from us. He was considered a Scholastic All-American or whatever, NWCA All-American. But just somebody that, I mean, everything that he had, he gave, you know. He's an awesome dude too. He's a funny guy. You guys, if he would be perfect on this podcast, he'd fit right in with you guys.
G-Bone, write down Mad Max for us.
That was one of my questions, is who do we got to have on the show?
He's that dude. He's that dude.
Guy. All right.
Yeah. Like he last weekend he was in the locker room and he's like, "Hey, I think I'm gonna go to Hawaii today." I was like, "What?" He's like, "Yeah, there's some standby flights and he can fly for free because his mom works for an airline." He's like, "I think I'm just gonna go." And so he just jumped on a plane. He just jumped on a plane and went to freaking Hawaii. I'm like, dude,
no way. He actually did it.
Yes, he did it. He just jumped on a plane and went to Hawaii. He was there for like 48 hours and turned around and came home.
What? That's like a 10-hour flight.
Man. Yeah, he's a dog, man. He is a dog. So it was so funny when we were recruiting Murin. I don't know if you want to hear all these stories or not. So we're going to a football game, and I was with Murin, Spencer Lee, and Caleb Young. And Caleb Young was committed. I think Kemmer was there too. And we're working on Kemmer, Spencer, and Murin, and we're walking over the football game. And we just got out of practice. They watched the Hawkeye Wrestling Club practice. We're walking to Kinnick. You know, it's wild. It's like September. It's hot. And the first person we run into in the parking lot at Carver was Gable. And Gable was like, you know, he knew all these kids that we're recruiting. And so he's talking to him. And then he starts talking about me. He's like, man, tell you what, Morningstar, he would have been a lot better if those girls would have left him alone. I'm like, Gable, we're trying to get these guys here. You know, I'm like, he's crazy. You know, like whatever.
Don't listen Murin's to this like, guy.
Yeah. Murin's like, yeah, he's liking it, you know? And we're talking, we don't walk 10 yards. We cross the street on Hawkins Drive. And there's like a group of girls, like they're, you know, they're dressed with not a lot of clothes on. You know what tailgating is like.
Yeah.
And the first girl, like we cross there's like probably five of them. They pass us on the sidewalk and she comes up and she grabs my ears and she's like, "Oh my gosh, you guys are wrestlers." She starts rubbing my ear. I'm like, "Oh my." And Murin was just like all about it. I think we got a commitment that day after that.
Of course you did.
But
what are they, man, it's not a cleat chaser. What do they call him for wrestling? Is it
singlet slut?
I've never heard that one.
I know. Isn't it like a mat rat or something like that?
Yeah, mat rat. I've heard that before. Yeah. No, so Murin would probably be on there. Obviously, Spencer was on there. Is on there. Everything that he's done for this program and his family. I mean, they're unbelievably good people. Spencer's definitely on there. Man, I'm trying to think. Shoot. I don't know. I got to think about the fourth one. I got to think. There's a
we
lot
of anybody
mind, but...
that was a teammate of yours while you were there.
Teammate of mine. I could do that. Probably.
Who's your favorite Joe teammate?
Slayton. Joe Slayton. He was, I mean, I got a lot. I got along with everybody on the team when I was in school. There wasn't anybody that I never got along with, and I could call anyone and hang out with them kind of deal, mm-hmm. You know, but you know, Joe Slayton, probably we grew up wrestling together since second, third grade. And, you know, I mean, I got a long history with him. So yeah, I'd say Slayton. He was a national finalist. He's got accolades. He's one of the toughest dudes that never won a national title in my eyes.
That's a good list for me. That's a fun list. Brought some good stories out.
Yeah.
Did you have any run-ins with any of the football guys back in your wrestling days?
Oh my gosh. I text Pat Anger and said I was coming on here.
Pat Anger is a friend of the show.
I actually texted Pat this morning too and said that you were coming on.
Pat's my guy. You know, I have a lot of stories with Pat. We both lived on the second floor of Hillcrest. The recruiting class for football was huge. Huge recruiting class my freshman year. You know, they
always
had like
35, 38.
Yeah, but no, like as far as prospects, they had like Moyaki, they had Dace Richardson, they had Canellis, they had Pat. They had some freaking studs. There was like 2 5-stars in that class and a bunch of 4-stars for whatever that's worth. There were some studs in that class, but I get along with all those. I still keep in touch with a lot of them, you know, Trey Strauss every once in a while, drop me a text or inbox, and obviously Pat. And I saw Tony Moyaki this fall on a recruiting weekend. He was, I think, what was he back for? He was back for something, but he was back for something. It was good seeing. I mean, all those guys, I mean, I got along with them so good. I mean, I still keep in pretty good contact with Pat. We talk regularly and I got some great stories with Pat. So, his agent bought him like a hyperbaric chamber mm-hmm. Before the draft.
Uh-huh.
Trying to get his cardio up and stuff. I don't know. And so like I would always give him shit. And we were over there, we were playing pool one night at his house, and we got to wrestling and dinking around. And
of course Pat was trying to wrestle.
You know how he is. He's freaking touchy feely, always trying to grab you and shit. And next thing you know, like we're rolling around and he went right into his hyperbaric chamber. This thing's like a freaking 10 at the time. I want to say it was like a $10,000 thing, and the freaking poles went right through it. He was laying on top of it. I'm like, oh my God, it was freaking hilarious. Over a pool game. But yeah, I mean, Pat's always been my guy. I mean, we've had a lot of fun together. You know, we've gone on trips together and gone camping and stuff like that. We've had a lot of fun. So he's a good dude. And then, Riley Reef, I mean, he was a wrestler, and so he always liked hanging out with the wrestlers. And he was, I don't know if he was 2 years younger than me or 1 year younger than me, but I mean, I've woke up, you know, in the morning, and this is when I was coaching, and he was at Detroit. It was like this time of year. I woke up in the morning, it's like 6 a.m, and I walked out into my living room and I was like, what in the hell? I'm like, who is that? It was freaking Reef just laying on my couch. I was like, what are you doing? He's like, oh, I didn't have a place to stay last night, so I thought I'd just come in and stay here. I thought it'd be cool. I'm like, yeah, how'd you get in? You know, Reef's a good dude. I haven't talked to him in a minute, but yeah, we've had a lot. I mean, we used to go on fishing
with Riley's younger brother, and
the Reefs are something else, man.
They are something else. If Brady is any correlation to Riley, they are something else.
Dude, they're something else, man. I got some good stories with him too, but yeah, I got along with the football players a lot, and that's why I was a football fan. I played football in high school, and I was a football fan, you know, kind of in high school, you know. But when I got to college is when I really, really got into it, you know. And you know, I even went my senior year, I went up to Wisconsin and watched the Wisconsin game. That's when we were on a roll, and I think we were undefeated at the time. And so I went up to Wisconsin. That was a huge game, and I'll never forget it. I was walking into Camp Randall Stadium, and I was with my buddy from high school, and I mean, it was packed. Like, you couldn't even walk down the sidewalk, and we didn't even have tickets. We were just trying to scalp a ticket. And this guy comes like through the sea of people. He's like, hey, you guys are Hawkeye fans. I have two tickets. They're 50 yard line, row 10. They're right in the Wisconsin section. And I was like, no way. Like, I was like, this is badass. And my buddy, he's a smart ass, but he was like, oh my gosh, thank you so much. Thank you. Gets the tickets and turns right around. And he goes, who needs two? And the guy's like, what are you talking? Like, we're messing. We're going to the game. We're going. And we were, when people started leaving the stadium early, and we were rubbing it in a little bit, but that was a lot of fun. But yeah, I didn't miss game. I mean, obviously when it got towards wrestling season, I wouldn't go to the November games or whatever, cause we'd be getting ready, but I went to as many games as I could. I was a super fan. I don't know shit about football really. I mean, I follow it, but I mean, it was one of my favorite parts of college was seeing your buddies out of that field doing what they love to, you know, and the support that they gave to us. I mean, they were always at our dual meets. And I mean, Matt Kroll and Humple used to come in and scrap with Telford when they were retired. They're already out of the league, but they would come in and wrestle with Telford because we didn't have as many big guys then.
Oh no!
And so those guys they would take turns going in and wrestling with Telford, would be dead tired, and these guys would just rotate in on them. And yeah, those are good dudes too. I mean, what more can you say about those guys?
Tell you what, man, the Iowa coaches love recruiting guys who wrestle in high school, and
big time.
Like some of them have been the best player, like some of the best wrestlers on our team have also been some of the best football players. Think like Tristan Wirfs,
Linderbaum, Austin Blythe.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Blythe. He's, I mean, those guys are awesome. And then, there's at least three really tough wrestlers coming in this next recruiting class with, what's the Norwalk kid's name? I don't know how big of like a prospect he's like a three-star kind of guy, but man, if he can wrestle, like if he can play football like he wrestles, that kid's gonna be good. That kid can scrap. We're recruiting
you guys recruited the Terminator.
The Terminator? Who's the Terminator?
Yeah, the kid from City High who's the best linebacker and an undefeated wrestler.
Keener's a world champ.
So I'd actually want to talk. How do you think that dynamic's going to work him playing?
Because we've talked about it a lot. And the fact that college wrestling doesn't have a 220-pound division is asinine. And Keeter needs it bad. So talk about it.
So Keeter is, you know, obviously Keeter's like a genetic freak. And he is like, I mean, one of the most athletic guys that I've ever scrapped with. And he's a big guy. And then, you know, the one thing that kind of gets overlooked with him is his mind. Like that guy, he's a freaking savage. Like he is a dog. Whatever he chooses to do, and hopefully it's both, he's going to tear heads off on the football field, and he's going to do work on the mat. I mean, whatever he wants to do. I mean, he's just got something really special about him. Man, guys like that don't come around very often. And I think obviously, you know, they talk about like, you look at like rivals. I don't know how much of that stuff that you watch or follow. I'm kind of a recruiting nerd with stuff like that. So I like to follow that, you know, kind of just, you know, follow football recruiting a little bit. But the thing that they don't measure, you know, they don't measure is his mind and his like, tenacity, because
heart that guy has stars.
That guy, he's got it in him. He's got it in him. Man, special dude.
So, and then, I mean, the plan's got to be to have him wrestle heavyweight, right?
Yeah, for sure. Go ahead.
It's like football season, last regular season games end in November. They got one more bowl game. How does that work as like, all right, you're in football shape. We got to transition you into wrestling shape real soon.
Whole different type of shape.
The meat of the season's like coming.
It is a whole different type of shape. And, you know, it's not going to be one of those deals where he gets done with his bowl game and, oh, we've got whoever, you know.
Yeah, we've got six duels in the next
three weeks. On January 7th, we got to get you back. No, it's going to be one of those deals where we'll work him back into it. We're not going to throw him right in the fire, I assume. I'm not going to speak for, you know, Tom and Terry and what the plan would be, but my assumption would be that, you know, it's going to be one of those deals where we work him into it, get him into shape, make sure he's ready to go. And then by, you know, the last stretch of the Big Ten season rolling into Big Tens, we turn him loose. That's kind of been the blueprint for guys that have done it. There's a kid from Fresno State who was, I think his name was Josh Hokett. He was their starting tailback. And then, you know, he got back in end of January and then got him in shape. And he was at least a one-time All-American, maybe a two-time All-American. So
what a stud. Oh,
freaking impressive. Yeah. Just a freak. You know, and it takes a special guy to be able to do that. And I've known Ben Keeter since he was just a little guy, and, he's that guy. He's that guy.
That's
love to hear it, because he looked like that guy, and we've been singing his praises pretty heavily on this podcast. So it's hype to hear.
Now, so, yeah, he's been playing a linebacker, right? And they're probably going to keep him, you know, no more than 250. But it seems like the heavyweights, a lot of the heavyweights these days have not been at that 285 mark. They've been kind of cutting to back down lately. What do you think? What do you think has been like driving that, like trying to be a little bit more athletic, maybe not trying to maximize your size in that weight class?
Yeah, heavyweights changed a lot. Obviously, you're going to have big guys because, you know, there's guys that are just bigger guys. But the guys that seems like have had the most success are right in that 250, 260 tops pound range. They can move. They're athletic. You know, you look at Cassiope right now, he's, you know, right in that 250 range.
Yeah, when he cut down, he looked like he got shredded.
He was shredded. He got too small, in my opinion, where he was giving up a little size where, I mean, he looked like a damn bodybuilder. Like he was cut up. And for him, he needed to have a little more size. He's always been bigger. You know, when he was in high school, shit, he was, I don't know, probably 275. He was a big dude. Like he was a big dude in high school. So right in that 250, 255 pound range is about right for him. So to answer your question though, I think that smaller heavyweights, you're seeing more of that now. You know, where traditionally it's always been the big guys and it's just different now. Times are changing with that. It seems like.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think it's good for a fan's perspective too. I think back in the day, there was a little bit more laying on guys than now.
The
way these heavyweights move now is different.
Yep.
It's exciting to watch too.
Yeah. And Keeter, he's got room to grow too. You look at it, he's so lean and his shoulders are like a mile wide, you know.
So were talking about his lats. The kid has some of the most impressive lats I've ever seen. They insert on his hip bones.
He looks like a damn cobra.
He has a bat wing suit on his fucking back.
He does. Guy's probably trying to break Goggins' pull-up record.
For real.
Yeah, man. G-Bone, you got any questions for
I was going to throw it to G-Bone as well.
Yeah, I got a couple questions for you, Ryan. So I'm sure you've been asked about this a bunch, but obviously big news for the Iowa wrestling program last year was the partnership with the UFC. So I was curious if you could elaborate on what does this mean for Iowa wrestling, and then what does this also mean for college wrestling as a whole? Are we going to see UFC try and build more partnerships at different schools?
I'm not sure about other schools. I think, Bellamere, who is on the women's team, her dad is Frank Mir.
Frank Mir, yeah.
Yep. Legend. So I think that had a little bit to do with it as far as them partnering with Iowa Wrestling, not just men's, but men's and women's. Mm-hmm. It's pretty exclusive. It basically, it makes us look good, right? It makes, wrestlers ultimately translate well into fighting. So they wanted to partner up with a wrestling team, and why wouldn't you do that with the Iowa Hawkeyes, who have right. That mentality of that toughness, that grind, that grit. What better partnership would you, I mean, what other school would you rather partner than the Iowa Hawkeyes? And so I think that's heavy on it as well. It basically goes, the money raised goes into the wrestling fund. So I don't know exactly whether it's I don't know what that fund is for, but it's a huge partnership. Obviously it looks good.
Real good for recruiting because a lot of wrestlers absolutely. Mm-hmm. are now seeing how much money they can make in MMA with their skills. And they're like, oh, this is looking pretty attractive. Oh, wait, Iowa's got a UFC partnership. I'm going to go there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's huge because, like 5 years ago, there you didn't see a lot of guys. You didn't hear about a lot of guys be like, yeah, I'm going to wrestle, then I'm going to the UFC. You just didn't hear about that. Now, I mean, they're all talking about it. Real Woods. I mean, that's his future path, sounds like. And
Bo Nichols
in the UFC. Bo Nichols, yep. Yeah. He's in the UFC. Yeah. Yep. Yep. He's doing well. I mean, so you just hear a lot more kids talking about it now. I mean, 5 years ago, you didn't. Now you hear it all the time that, yeah, my goal is to wrestle in college, go through the next Olympic cycle, and then I'm going right into MMA. And, you know, recent commits, or recent guys that we've recruited, that's what their goals are. So, I mean, having that UFC tag on Iowa wrestling is huge.
Yeah. So then additionally, so you were a coach for the Grapple at the Gridiron. It looked like an awesome event. I hope it comes back one day, try and break the record. But this might sound silly, but when you're coaching guys and preparing them for that event, do you have to prepare them differently because it is outside and there's a potential element difference as opposed to an arena?
We don't really train for it. You know,
well, it was obviously just the one time, but
yeah. You know, obviously, you want to be ready if there, I mean, if the dew point's high, you're going to have a wet mat. You got to be ready for stuff like that. But you know, I mean, we didn't do anything necessarily any different than what we always do. You know, at the end of the day, you're going out to compete against another guy. He's got the same conditions that you're in. So going out and wrestling, wrestling in that match, you're on the same level playing field. So, I would love to bring it back. That was like a perfect storm that day. I mean, you talk about a perfect day for one outdoor wrestling, and then you had a huge football game that night. It just, everything just worked. And Ference was unbelievably awesome throughout that process and our administration and getting it done. I know that there was a lot of nervous people because, I mean, a week later there was one of the biggest snowstorms that we had all year. It was a foot of snow in Kinnick Stadium, you know, yeah. I mean, 6 days later. So, and we had 65 and sunny, you know, I mean, you couldn't ask for a better day. Everything came together.
It's because God loves wrestling.
God loves wrestling. That's right.
God loves the Hawks. I remember that day, man. That was, we were able to catch the first couple matches back at the hotel. And then we just had to follow along on our phones as best we could the rest of the day. But I don't know if we've ever walked into a more juiced up Kinnick Stadium than that day, because the Hawk fans were primed and ready to go for that.
Yeah, they were tailgating throughout the day and they were having fun. That Minnesota game was awesome too, because they were like, man, they have like one or two losses going into that game, and they're like 8-2 or something maybe, or
they were a good team. I think they're just a little bit above 500. They were a good team.
Oh, were they? Okay. I remember it being a huge game, though. Like it was,
we were
it was
a pretty exciting. Good team that year.
Yeah, well, we were undefeated going into that game. So, like, every game,
that's what it was. Yeah,
the season, people got a little bit more like, "Holy shit, they're gonna fucking do this thing."
My last question for you though then is, so I remember hearing from the wrestlers back when I was in high school, all of them talking about trying to cut weight and stuff, having some crazy stories about how they were trying to lose weight. I remember there's a guy who was saying he was trying to spit off like a half pound, just spitting into a bucket. What's the craziest thing you've ever done to cut weight or you've seen an athlete do to cut weight?
I mean, you know, cutting weight is so, the science behind it now is just so different from, you know, when you're like in high school and you know, you're in high school and you're sitting in a sauna and you're spitting or whatever. Like, it's so different from that now. Now it's the science behind it. There's it's more about cutting calories. It's more about, you know, staying big and staying strong and being efficient. And, you know, your lifestyle is everything to do with cutting weight. Like, after my sophomore year, I didn't cut any weight. Just because I was more efficient and just smarter in my diet and everything. But so you don't see that as much anymore, because, you know, with these 1 hour and 2 hour weigh-ins, if you're doing that, you're going to crash and burn. Like you're going to hit that 3 minute mark and you aren't going to be able to function. And, you know, and then you throw the schedule that we have, you throw the fan base that we have, the platform these kids have, they want to do it right. They want to feel the best that they can possibly feel. So we talk about some of those weight cutting techniques that are used in high school that you can get away with in high school when you only have maybe a couple tough matches a season. But now,
and you're a superstar amongst
yeah,
kids.
You're a super yeah. And you're not having the competition that you have when you're in college. And then you get to that next level, you got to do it right. You have to do everything right, and or you pay the price.
Yeah, well, I'm glad to hear that Iowa is a better system than my high school spit program for maintaining. It's reassuring to hear as a fan of the program.
Hoover, thanks for joining us again.
I click the buttons and
get out of the way.
That guy. I don't have anything else. Did you guys talk about Ben Keeter at all?
No, dude, we forgot that one.
Okay, just wanted to make sure. I figured you did. Are you a Bears fan, Ryan?
I'm a Bears fan. I don't know why. My good aunt question. Lived in Chicago. Yeah. My aunt lived in Chicago downtown. So as a little kid, she'd always bring me Bears stuff. So it stuck. We have a huge rivalry in our office. Telford's a huge Cowboys fan, and it makes me sick.
Who's a Cowboys fan? That's just tell him he's not actually a Cowboys fan.
Is he
from Texas?
No, he's just a huge he grew up right outside of Philly, basically. And so I think that's
what's going on. The Cowboys. What?
You just like hated his neighbors or something like that, or what?
I don't know, but
oh shit.
Yeah, he's a Cowboys fan. Then Terry's a huge Patriots fan. I mean, we go back and forth in the office all the time, but
love it.
Yeah, it's yeah, I'm a Bears fan. I'm a glutton for punishment. There's a lot of Bears fans on the team, like Warner and Assad and Cassiope, and they're huge Bears fans too. So we can cry together. But
yeah,
shout out Rob Tonyan. You just got a pretty cool tight end friend of the show.
Yeah, we're hoping to get Rob for an hour here in about 10 days for a podcast down in Nashville, but. Ryan, we appreciate your time and working through the tech difficulties at the beginning, really.
Yeah, no problem. It's awesome. I appreciate you guys having me on. It's awesome.
You're welcome. You're anytime.
Man. Thank you so much.
And I'm sure the fans loved this one. Thank you guys
it
for listening.
It was unreal, Clover. You missed a hell of an episode.
I edit it, so I'll listen back.
Hey, you didn't give any shout out to the pork producers. Don't you usually do that?
Oh, shit. You're right. We did it.
Yeah, well, when I'm gone, this whole thing goes to shit, you know?
Well, hey, I did it for you. There you go.
There you go. Ryan.
I'm currently working through 8-pound pork butt by myself. I'm about halfway through it, 3 days in.
Nice.
I'm going back to Chicago on Friday, so I've got 2 days to finish the rest of it.
Okay.
Nice. I grew up raising pigs. Yeah, I grew up raising pigs. I still have some sows and stuff. So
let's go.
Yeah.
So that's had to make sure you got that in there. You didn't miss that out.
Absolutely.
Big shout out to Morningstar Farms and the Washington County pork producers.
Yeah. Huge. Right at the end. Check out the Patreon if you want extra perks, all that. Patreon.com/washupwalkons. For those who are on there, you'll be listening to this a day early because that is one of the perks. And a lot of fun stuff coming as we near the Nashville trip here soon. Thank you guys for listening. As always, talk to you next time, and peace. Hey, thanks for listening to the show. If you want more, you can check us out on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube by searching Washed Up Walk-Ons. And if you're interested in supporting the show, head over to patreon.com/washedupwalkons, where you can find bonus podcasts, merchandise, and other cool perks. Best part, half of your subscription benefits the kids at UI Children's Hospital. We'll see you next time. Hawks by a million.